In a world where tech products are constantly being developed, everyone wants to gain some tech skills and not be left out. Others, however, have chosen to abandon the world of zeros and ones for spices and open fire exceptions. In this episode, we sit with Chef Keeks, a software engineer who was part of the fintech revolution in Ghana, who now practices as a full-time chef, serving curated recipes for a plethora of taste buds. Enjoy today's episode. This episode is brought to you by Big Spark. Big Spark is the UK's fastest growing data solutions consultancy, translating your business needs into data architecture, strategy, and engineering. Together with their technical partners, they focus on swift and efficient business value delivery. Taking an innovative approach to every challenge, Big Spark is an agile team of over 100 world-class engineers and data scientists pushing the boundaries of what can be achieved with AI, data, software, cloud, and machine learning. To find out how Big Spark can ignite your data solution, visit us at www.bigspark.dev. Big Spark, igniting change through engineering. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Tech Step Podcast, where we navigate today's tech wave one electrifying conversation at a time. I am your host, Raymond Cloutier, and today I have a friend, a brother on board to have a very nice conversation around, you know, pivoting careers. And he's an amazing guy. Everyone in Ghana knows Chef Keeks, all right? I wouldn't want to, you know, do any introduction. I would just hand the fort over to him, and then we can delve into today's conversation. So, Chef Keeks, welcome to today's episode of the Tech Step Podcast, and yeah. We would like to hear from you.
Thank you, Raymond. It's an honor to be on a podcast like this. I've missed podcasting. As someone who used to podcast, I'm glad I get to get an invitation to share my experience in life, my experience in pivoting from a fully tech-based career into a, should I say, tech-influenced career as it stands right now. Yeah. So thanks for having me.
That's nice. Okay, so a fellow podcaster has a newbie podcaster coming on board. So let's see, maybe you can evaluate me over, like, in the long run of how I'm doing.
But definitely, I'll give you that.
All right, sure. So let's get into the name Chef Keeks. You know, where did the name come from?
So my legal name, the name I have on my certification and stuff is, my name is George Frederick Niso Akufi Odoi. Pretty long name. But I think Kiko is the more recognized name. I got named Kiko by a friend in high school because we both supported Manchester United, and there was a player on Manchester United called Federico Makeda. Oh. But his nickname was Kiko Makeda. So that's kind of where that came from. And when I was in high school, I used to be a goalkeeper. Hey. So I used to be, yes.
That's new to me.
Yeah, I used to be a pretty decent goalkeeper. So in playing stuff and relating it to football, this person is actually called Daniel Cranting. I'm not sure exactly where he works now, but he used to work with City FM, and he's like a pretty popular sports analyst in Ghana. Okay. So he gave me that name, Kiko. Initially, I didn't like it, but I realized growing up, when someone gives you a nickname and you accept it, it becomes less of a something they used to tease you, and something that is more your identity. And I kind of grew fond of the name, so I kept with it. But when I was trying to change my Twitter handle after I'd pivoted into cooking, I realized Kiko is a very popular name, so I couldn't get a name Chef Kiko. But a few of my friends had been teasing me with the name Keeks, like, oh, Kiko Keeks. Then I just decided to try Chef Keeks, and it actually was available. So I just stuck with that. And that is what has eventually become my chef identity, if I'm to say.
That's nice. Well, I would say then surround yourself. So anyone listening who's trying, you know, trying to rebrand, surround yourself with people who are creative and who can, you know, see a brand out of what you are. I believe surround yourself with the right people.
Exactly.
Okay, so cooking, you know, it's just out of nowhere. But before we even get into cooking, you were doing well, relatively, you know.
Relatively.
I knew about Dream Oval, when I was in my third year or so, I even had a chance to probably, you know, start something of a, so like an internship of a sort, but it didn't go smoothly as I was expecting for various reasons. It wasn't anyone's fault. It was just, you know, the dynamics. And those times, you know, Dreamover was like, you know, that, like you guys were doing some, you know, great stuff. It was like that fintech space. Like everyone was mentioning Dreamover. You had a good career there. And then you decide to move. Let's first talk about your tech journey, how you got into tech, and then you can segue that with what led you out of tech.
So my brother, my older brother, who essentially at a point in time or still is my closest friend, at a point was even I can say my best friend, also read, he's 3 years older than me, so he read computer engineering in KNUST. So when I was about to go to the university, I realized what he did fascinated me, the ability to create things. Because we all use websites, we all use web apps. The ability to understand the nuances of creating those things fascinated me. And at that time, I always wanted to kind of be like my brother. So I also read computer science. I didn't like the whole engineering aspect of it, so I just stuck to computer science because that was what was going to guarantee me a career in writing code. So I did computer engineering computer science in KNUST. In my second year, my dad, I think, knew or had connections with someone who knew the CEO of Dreamweaver at that time, Derrick Ndazi. So I sort of got an internship opportunity to go be an intern at Dreamweaver. I think that was the pivotal point in my tech career, because initially it was just school and what they would say in school. That was my first real professional internship. And going there, I realized I was, I don't want to say forced, but Dreamweaver has a pretty intensive internship program. So you were forced to create in tech. It wasn't those internship programs where you go and, should I say, substitute for people or help in places where they may be needing support. It was an internship program which was specific for interns. So when we got there, we had supervisors, we had an internship project, something we had to get done. It was the first time I was faced with the need to have to think beyond programming as a simple thing that solves math problems in class to putting the ones and twos into real life and solving a real life problem and being able to understand that real life, no matter how complex it is, can be broken down to ones and zeros. So that piqued my interest. Right? Doing the internship at Dreamweaver, we built, I think, a food delivery app. The issues that come with it, the support issues, the little nuances that as people who are in tech and create tech, we understand that you can never really understand until you work on a product which is supposed to be used by human beings. And then from there, I started doing my own projects because I fell in love with programming, fell in love with the ability to solve ideas. I created a pidgin dictionary for someone as a contract, but then I got that invested, so it felt like mine. I created an app which allowed you to scan the code of recharge cards to be able to load, because sometimes you are too tired to read the actual numbers, but the app was supposed to help simplify that process. Solving little problems, going back to Dreamweaver, doing more internships. So I got really averse with the programming side. Even to the point that whilst I was still in university, my final year, I had secured a job as a front-end developer for a small startup called Pentium Tech. So it seemed that was how my life was going to go. I was going to be a programmer. I was going to be a software engineer. I ended up back at Dreamweaver, where I worked for a whole year. I worked actively on SlidePay and certain SlidePay applications. Like I think the fintech space was growing in Ghana. I was actively part of it. But for some reason, I started cooking for a bunch of friends as a way to release stress, release tension. And I realized the more I did it, the more that took my mental space. There was a time when I would spend 12, 13 hours writing code, not caring about anything, pushing through the code, because that's what gave me life. I realized now I have a deadline and I don't really, it's not that I don't care, but as much as I'm writing the code, I'm thinking about the food I'm going to make for someone for free in the evening after work. That was a little challenging. As someone who has fully understood how much you need to be dedicated to the work of being a developer, it needs to be something that's almost always on the forefront of your thinking. Because you don't always solve problems whilst you're writing code. You solve the problems on the route back home when you think about, oh, this code didn't work. What can I do? What exception can I catch? What did this exception throw? How do I think I can go around it? Doing the research, watching the tutorial, thinking about how you could go around. I had lost, to some extent, the passion to want to solve the problems. And I was gradually getting to a place where I was writing code because that's what fed me. That is what led to the conscious decision to think about potentially pivoting. Yeah. I think that's the way I can.
Right. Yeah. So you did mention something about tutorials and all that. So should I assume that all your cooking expertise come from YouTube or masterclasses or maybe your parents?
Essentially. The habit of learning how to figure things out as a developer still stuck. So I haven't been to any professional culinary institution, but I understood from being a programmer that the internet has most of your solutions if you can only find a way to practice it, right? So I gave in fully to being a chef because the friends I've been cooking for started appreciating and realizing buying food is a hassle. So they were moving into a bigger house. It's a group of friends who live together, and there was a spare room, and they asked me, would I want to come and work with them, as in be their living chef?
Right.
They would match whatever salary I was getting at Dream Mobile.
Right.
So to me, it made sense. Like, you have a job opportunity to move, to do something that is constantly on your mind, but then you still get the same remuneration you would have gotten if you were at Dream Mobile. Plus, I had to live in their house, which means I don't have to worry about transport.
Right.
And because I'm making food, I don't have to worry about food. In that thinking, I realized, even with the same salary, it's more of a salary. Because food and transport are the main things that would deplete my salary.
Hello there, Tech Surfers. I have got some news for you. The Tech Surf Podcast is now on Instagram and LinkedIn. Follow us on Instagram at The Tech Surf Podcast and LinkedIn, The Tech Surf Podcast, to stay up to date on new episodes and to get interactive. Don't forget to like, share, and send us feedback on your favorite episodes and the lessons you've learned. See you soon. Right.
So if I've got a chance to do something I've fallen in love with, and I get to have the same salary, where the main things which make my salary lose its, should I say, numerical value are no longer there, then it's a good idea to actually potentially pursue this. After all, I do know how to program. If I try for a year and it's something that's not working out, I can easily go back to programming. Because those skills, even though I need to sharpen them up, are not really going anywhere.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's true. Yes.
So it wasn't, most people change their careers with, should I say, a leap of faith. Luckily for me, as much as there was a leap of faith involved, it was a very calculated decision, right? I didn't just get up and say, I'm not going to write code anymore. You still needed to fend for yourself. I still needed to be able to do the regular things I need to do because I'm an adult and I need to take care of myself.
Right.
So it was an opportunity which came, which allowed me to pivot without thinking about, should I say, the hassle involved in not having a job and working out the chef career with nothing as a base.
I like that. And I really like how you are still, you know, using your expertise, your logical reasoning, critical thinking in all that you do. And I think regardless of whatever field anyone finds themselves in, they can still, you know, apply those, like the transferable skills, right? So it's still essential. How has the journey been like, you know, especially in our country, for those of for those listening who do not know where we come from? We are from Ghana. And when we talk about chefs, when we talk about, you know, big, you know, restaurants, you know, maybe one of the biggest that we know of is Papaya, because we all grew up eating Papaya. But for some time now, you know, this, you know, fine dining, create a menu for me has become, it's now in vogue and all that. And let's be honest, yes, there may be a few affluent people in Ghana who patronize such services, but it's not for the average Joe. You know, the average Joe is not always, you know, like embracing, come and create something for me. I just want to eat our fufu and then we're good to go. How's the journey been like for you in, you know, transitioning from a tech career to one that is, you know, relatively, you know, high risk?
The journey has been, I think the word to use is complicatedly interesting. From the personal fulfillment standpoint, it's been hectic because everybody expects, or everybody has a mindset that when you start something new, you will excel at it. It's been a little difficult at points when things aren't going the way I expect it to go. And that is a human thing, because everybody expects that when you put your best into something, it would at least yield a tangible result. When I started, for the first 18 months to 2 years, all I did was make breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the people I worked for. It gets stressful at the point, because people have different wants. And the thing you thought was working could one day get into a meeting with the person you cook for and says, I'm tired of this, I don't want to have this anymore. Reinvent something, create a new menu.
Right.
And that in itself works on different ways on your ego. Am I not doing this right? Is it that the food I'm making was not good enough and that's why he wants to change? Or is it a human preference thing? Something I've eventually come to realize that preference doesn't necessarily mean non-appreciation. It's just a preference. He's tired of eating yam and stew. There's nothing wrong with that. But initially, it used to make me feel like I'm not doing the yam and stew right. And that's why this person doesn't want to eat it.
Right.
Then there's been, after that, I started doing pop-ups. Once in a while, a pop-up where I would serve a unique item. I looked around Accra and realized there wasn't really a Mexican food, dynamic to our food culture. I started selling tacos. There are days when you would sell everything out in 2 hours, and there are days when at 9 p.m. you still have more than half of your things you want to sell, still waiting to be sold.
Right.
It's just the up and down. The journey, like I said, complicated because it doesn't always go the way you want, but in hindsight, it has helped to build character. It has helped to build a certain resilience. It has helped me to understand when I can sit back and look at things objectively that I really actually want to do this. Because if I didn't, I'd have quit a long time ago. There have been times when I've been asking myself, the people I used to work with who used to earn the same a few thousand CDs with me on a monthly basis are now earning tens of thousands of CDs. Their lives seem to be in a better place, driving cars, moving out of the country. The tech boom has made it seem as if, did I pivot at the wrong time?
Right, right.
Yes. Should I have stayed in tech? Because as much as I was not, should I say, the creme de la creme of programmers, I was not bottom tier either. Mm-hmm. I could stand my own. I could have conversations, tech conversations with those who run the industry and still not be lost and know what I'm talking about.
Right.
But it makes you question these things. And I realize these things are supposed to happen to make you fully understand what your purpose is, what you really want to put your energy to. So yes, it's been a complicated journey. It's been a stressful journey. But there are days when you get gigs with people you never thought you would serve. I've served food to people I never thought I'd serve. I've made food I never thought I'd be able to make 5 years ago. I've come up with recipes and things which are particular to only me, ways of expressing myself in flavor, right, and in texture and in context, right, which I realized only I, based on my experiences in life, would have been able to bring out. And though there are trying times, there are also high times. There are times when you feel, I know I met you at a similar institution.
Exactly,
I met you
exactly
serving food to...
Literally, I was just about to say that. We literally met on, you know, like on the basis of food. Our mutual friend, Nashoma Bergeson, shout out to her, organized, you know, this little meetup for friends. And she was talking about Chef Keith. And I'd heard of you, I'd seen your social media, but I was like, okay, let me try this out. Then Charlie, bro came, you know, serving like some like yogurt Alfredo, like pancake. And I was like, yo, what's the... And the food was good, because at the time I was living in France, and, you know, I'm also a foodie. I'm quite a chef myself. And my taste buds have been around the world. I can eat almost everything. And I say almost because there are some limits.
I appreciate that.
Almost everything. But I just liked how, apart from your very creative, you know, approach to presenting food and all that, it was also the warm nature of, you know, the reception. I don't think we had met before, but it just felt like we already knew each other. And
knew each other.
And from there, like, the customer experience was just top notch. And I just knew that, okay, this is someone I like to have in my circle, someone who was cool at the same time going for his stuff. And it was after a series of conversations, I was like, oh, wow, you actually were in tech. So, yeah, I believe it's like just to buttress that point you were making, honestly. Yeah.
And yeah, I think tech also, I mean, as a developer, I think this is where maybe I can go a little into the tech aspect of it.
Right.
As someone who used to primarily do backend development, I used to do a lot of Spring and Java EE for enterprise levels and systems. And then I moved into front end. Mm. I think if I never moved into front end development, I may never have fully understood how tech influences my creative aspect in terms of cooking.
Right.
But becoming a front end developer before I left tech, I was a web developer, and I also used to work on Ionic apps, which were hybrid applications. That was new in the system.
Right.
But what that taught me was that if, let's say, I was trying to create a dropdown, right, when I used to do backend, it's just you write a bunch of code. I didn't necessarily even have to worry about what a dropdown looks like. What does a dropdown feel like? What does the... when I touch the arrow or the dropdown, does it change color to make me realize that
animation, the
motion, person has interacted? Exactly. Right. I didn't understand all of those things as a backend developer. When I did front end, I realized you could be given a picture of, let's say, a proposed website. The designer will put it all out, give you the assets. And my job would be to recreate that with code so that it comes to life for someone to use. In my office, the people who are writing code in C#, the people who are writing code in JavaScript, and even in JavaScript, people are writing code in different frameworks. It made me understand that a dropdown is not just a dropdown. It's how the developer decides to implement a dropdown. So it could be the generic dropdown that comes with the JavaScript framework, or it could be you sitting down and redesigning a drop down with all the essential code to make sure it runs the way you expect it to run.
Right.
Applying that basic knowledge to cooking made me realize somebody can put a burger on the internet, and the burger comes out looking like a double burger with bacon and avocado and let's say relish. That's their interpretation of what a burger should taste like according to them. Because I understand that from programming, I was able to pivot in the sense that I can also create a triple burger with pickled onions and a chimichurri and a Thousand Island dressing. If only that is how I want to express myself. And knowing that expressing yourself in code doesn't necessarily mean that a dropdown is the best dropdown. But then in programming, when you suggest something. Well, I want to do the drop down this way.
Right.
The people who test your code will tell you, well, I don't like this drop down because when I click it, the button comes out too fast and it confuses me. So that taught me how to understand that even food has a user experience element to it. And the user experience element to food is mainly preference. So I'm glad you mentioned earlier that you can eat almost anything. That means there's a 10, 1, 15% section of food that even though may be delicious to somebody in the country that is made from, is just not for you. That's preference. It's the same information I get when I send an app for user testing.
Wow. Listen, that's why you need to have a techie chefy, because I'd have never thought about food with UI UX, you know, analogies, and that is very, very impressive. So it's actually very nice to have such conversations with, you know, techies who can balance things. Yeah. Just, you know, balance things out in this breather session. How did your parents react to your decision? Because in a typical African household, Charlie, you've gone to school to become a computer engineer, and you know, parents, you know, like to, you know, flaunt their kids' careers. Oh, I'm tempted to speak in our local dialect, but I can't. KNUST, you know, my child went to KNUST, and like, you know, he works in tech. Then one day you come, it's like, mom, you know, I want to cook. How did your parents, or how did family in general react to this?
So my brother was one of the contributing factors. I spoke to him a lot. He helped me make a decision. His standpoint was that if this is something you keep thinking about, there's no point forcing yourself through programming. So take the leap. What's the worst that can happen? You know, you already understand the basics of programming. If cooking doesn't work out, you just come back, sharpen your skills, and find another job. It's pretty simple. Right? My dad... being my dad has never really forced anything on us. So as much as he may not have been happy with it, after I told him the dynamics of the decision, he was okay with it. It's when you think about it from an employment standpoint, it makes sense. Because if anything, I'm going to be saving an extra 600, 700 CDs every month by doing this job. So if I had said, I'm not going to be a programmer, I'm going to quit and go and figure out my life in cooking, it may have been a little harder for my dad. Right. But because there was the salary aspect, there was essentially you doing the same job and just using different things to do the job, he was okay with it. My mom, on the other hand, had the feelings you lamented on earlier. My son has gone to university, why do you want to go and cook? Stop and cook. And to our listeners, cooking is not exactly a top tier occupation in Ghana. It's more of the doctors and the lawyers and the engineers. So society, being in terms of the society we come from, being a chef is not exactly something any parent would want their child to do. Unless, of course, maybe I didn't go to school to do programming, I went to do like culinary or something, then that would be a different conversation.
Right.
But I've always believed that what is meant to be will be. And now my mom supports me wholeheartedly in this journey I'm on, buying me things for my work, buying me equipment, giving advice, sending me recipes. It got to a point she realized this is something this person wants to do. And she's tasted my food and she realizes, oh, this is actually, I'm not just saying I want to know how to cook, but I want to learn how to cook.
Putting in very good effort.
Putting in the effort, the result shows, the growth shows. So they may not have been necessarily supportive, but now they are. And that's all I can hope for.
That's nice. That's nice. Well, shout out to your parents who have been able to embrace your transition from tech into cooking, because having that conversation in a typical African household, it wouldn't go down so well. All right, so let's talk a little bit about cooking. What are your three signature meals? You don't need to share your recipe with the world because it's, you know, patent. But, you know, just, you know, throw it out there. What are the names, you know, you will give to your favorite recipes or your favorite meals?
I think the first signature meal I developed was my own version of a cheesesteak sandwich. right? So that was the first thing I made for the people I used to work with, and the person mentioned, I think you can sell this. It's fine. It's, I found a way to make meat that's accessible here, cheese and vegetables, to make sense for the flavor palette of us, of the Ghanaian. But you, Raymond, will attest to the fact that the Ghanaian likes a lot more flavor, a lot more boldness in the way their food comes across, unlike other parts of the world. So the cheesesteak sandwich. The second one I'd say is tacos. I have an assorted selection of tacos. I spent a long time researching, experimenting, and trying tacos out. And I realized it's one of the dishes which is customizable to the, like, per element. I can make 6, 7, 8 different tacos on one kind of meat. Just changing the sauce out, changing the flavor context, changing the type of tortilla I'm using, changing the sauce out. So tacos are one of my signature dishes. I can't necessarily say this particular taco is my signature one or the other one, but making tacos where we incorporate fruits, I can say is the second of my signature ones. And then I figured out a way to make a glass noodle salad, which speaks to the Ghanaian context a little more, using things available around us. I should mention that I have come up with what I want to call my own cuisine, which is Ghanaian intercontinental fusion. I pick dishes from around the world and then use the ingredients, flavors, and textures I grew up appreciating and loving to recreate those dishes, so that it's not entirely what I would make if I was in, let's say, Mexico. If I was making tacos, I wouldn't make tacos like you would find in Mexico, but I would make tacos which have flavors and textures I'm used to growing up. But then the most essential thing is to stay true to the original dish, so that if a Mexican should come and try to sample some of my tacos or my burritos or my Mexican themed dishes, it's not different. Right, contextually, it is still a it's unique, but contextually, it's still a taco. It does not deviate from what a taco should be. It does not deviate from what a glass of noodle salad should be. It just won't taste like a glass of noodle salad would taste if I had it in Thailand, because of the access to things that I have here in Ghana.
That's great. That's great.
So, yeah,
that's great. I can tell that you're quite a critical thinker when it comes to curating and creating, and I'm just imagining what your brain looks like. What do you do to wind down? What do you do to, you know, relax?
Do I even relax? that's it. I like being in nature. I think one of the things that helps me calm down is being in nature. I grew up in, well, the formative part of my years was in the Eastern region, in the Cocoa Research Institute of Ghana, which luckily had a lot of greenery and nature. So to unwind, there are times when I'd go back there for a few days just to de-stress. I like to be driven around. Sitting in a car, sometimes when I'm trying to figure out a menu, a recipe, I have a guy who I work with who has a car. I would sometimes just call him and say, you know what, let's go for a drive. Just sit there and stare into life. Stare into what is happening around me as it's being driven. It inspires me to come up with things. Shopping for food relaxes me. When I go to the market and I see a bunch of ingredients, I just get excited. Wow, look at these tomatoes, look at these green peppers, look at these carrots, the colors. Going to Max Mart, seeing a whole bunch of meats, seeing a whole bunch of spices, that calms me down. And recently, fellowship with the God. It's something I put aside a lot, but in the harshness of a lot of things happening right now, that has helped to calm me down a lot. And also cooking. I'm always cooking. I may not be cooking for sale, but I'm always making something for someone I love, someone I appreciate, someone I... It's just cooking excites me. It makes me happy. It makes my creative juices flow. When you have to cook for work, it's work, it's a responsibility. But when you have to cook for fun, it's freeing. It allows you to do what you think you want to do. It allows you to express yourself in a in a relieving way. So, yeah, I think those are some of them. Well, and I watch basketball a lot.
Okay. Well, I wish I could say I watch sports as well. That part of me has never existed, unfortunately.
But that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Because the funny thing is, my dad loves, you know, sports. My mom loves to see men watch sports. But I was never able to give her that excitement.
But what do you do to unwind?
So mine is, you know, music. So after cooking my brain during the day, I'm a music producer, a writer, podcasting like this, talking with people, having chill conversation. I love to travel. I don't do a lot of that at the moment. I also like to cook. But then I've realized that, and you can clearly attest to it, that the way cooking is, when you just, you know, have gaps in your cooking, your skill just starts to, you know, gradually depreciate because you've even forgotten. Yeah, so my cooking, I have a food blog. I wouldn't say my cooking is not bad, but it's plateaued. You know, I haven't been as curious as much as possible. So I recently started, you know, getting, I saw this ad for, you know, HelloFresh. So they, you know, send you ingredients, they send you a lot of things. So I've played around with different stuff. I think I even have something I'm going to eat from a HelloFresh meal today. So I just try to do that, you know, to keep the skill going. The plans for my food blog, I don't really know. I don't know if, you know, to become a full-time chef or maybe invite Chef Keeks one day. But cooking...
Yeah, I'll be waiting.
But, you know, cooking excites me. I also like the idea. I wouldn't say my so I call myself an explorative chef, where I also like to, you know, throw things. Like, there was some time I did, you know, mashke with pepper. There's another time I did, for example, I wrapped some ham around... potatoes, and I baked it, and after I, you know, drizzle some honey. So those little things, I like to play around the kitchen, but then sometimes my tech role or my tech job takes more precedence than my cooking. Yeah. So maybe I need to get some, you know, tutorials from Chef Keeks, you know, to be able to get back in my cooking game.
I think with cooking, as long as you are enjoying yourself, cooking for work, like I mentioned, is a very different ball game.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you get to cook for fun. I always encourage people to cook because it's one of those things which makes you create something out of nothing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean it's always going to be delicious, but there's almost always a part of it that makes you feel proud of yourself that you took these ingredients and treated them with a certain amount of respect and skill to come up with something that's actually nutritious and delicious for you to eat. The gratification you get from that is very different.
Right. That's true. That's very true. Speaking about food, let's talk about food and hip hop. You know, have you done the second edition or the third?
Second edition.
Second edition, right? Let's talk a bit about it. You know, the idea, how it's gone, how the journey has been. Yeah, let's delve a little bit.
So food and hip hop is, when you mentioned music, I realized I didn't mention music as one of the ways to unwind. I don't know if music is, no, in fact, music is, because... until not too long ago, my energy driver when I'm cooking is music. And I used to listen to a lot of hip hop. A lot of hip hop. Like, it's one of the forms of music that I was attached to.
Right.
So, as someone who goes out once now with my friends, I realized when we go out, it's more Afrobeat, it's more Amapiano, it's more those types of music out here in Ghana.
Right.
And for the first few hours, yeah, you can enjoy it. But I used to get, I don't know if bored is the word, but tired of it.
Fatigue.
I wish I would hear some of the hip-hop songs I listen to at home when I go out. So I... came together with another friend, which I met on the same day I met you, which is Gabby. I met Gabriel on the same day, and we came together to create an event, right? I was already the food guy, so I'll bring food. And Gabby is more of a logistics guy. Gabby knows where to get what, where to get things. So Gabby was a logistics guy. And we decided, if you are going to create an event, why not create an event for people who we think are like us, who go out and wish they could hear some of the songs they hear at home, the hip-hop songs.
Right.
If anything, it's a different music, a different music, what's the word, direction for these events. Yeah, different music approach, because there are a lot of these events where multiple vendors come together and serve different kinds of food, but the main music theme or the music the music theme is more widespread. Why don't we curate an event for the more avid hip-hop listener? Because I know DJ friends who wish they could play more hip-hop in their sets. You know, DJs play music based on what the crowd wants. And the general crowd on a Friday evening or a Saturday evening in Accra wants to dance to Afrobeat. Yes, Afrobeat and Amapiano and the likes of that. So let's have an event, a day event even, because our event is mainly a day event. A day event where people come, have some of the best food and food food in Accra, and also get to listen to songs they don't get to listen to as much as they like when they go out. Let's create a different experience, because music plays a big role in how people enjoy these experiences. So we decided to stick to hip-hop. We did the first one, which went pretty well, fixed some of those issues in the second edition, and that was an even bigger success. And we are hoping that we can take the lessons we learned from the first and the second and potentially come up with a third edition, which promises to have a better experience, less issues, and more fun activities for those who are involved.
All right, okay. I also know a little bit about you and Malta Guinness, you know, as an ambassador of a sort. Can you just maybe throw a bit of light? What does that entail? What does your work? Yeah.
So that my contract with Malta Guinness is currently ended, but I was a Malta Guinness ambassador for 10 months. That involved using Malta Guinness, trying to explore the both meal pairing and meal addition options for Malta Guinness. So the Malta Guinness starts becoming just something we drink for refreshments, but something we could cook with, something we can pair with dishes. I figured out how to make that work, and I would post recipes, I would post me, my experience with life, my experience in cooking whilst Malta Guinness was part of. I personally drink a lot of Malta Guinness. So it was an easy affiliation to make, mainly because I think the person who introduced me to this ambassadorial role came to my restaurant, Blue Cheese, and they realized, oh wait, this guy actually serves Malta Guinness here. He drinks a lot of Malta Guinness. And I'm like, is there a way for us to work together? And that led to conversations and eventually the ambassadorial role, which lasted for a few months.
All right. That's nice. That's nice. Okay, so I'm throwing this question at you right in your face, and I want an honest answer. Do you regret leaving tech? Or let me rephrase, if you were given a tech role today, would you take it? If yes, why? If no, why?
I would take it because Ghana is hard. And a tech role which pays a significant salary would obviously benefit me. There are days, like I mentioned earlier, when things are hard, when you're not getting people to book you for private dining, or my restaurant has been closed since March. We are still trying to figure out how to come back. In these times when the things you actually wish would happen are not happening, yes, you're a human being. You would regret to some extent. Oh, I don't know if regret is the word. I would lament. You see, if maybe if I was in tech, things would be better. But we can never really know. And I realize everything happens for a reason. With accepting that God has a will for everything in my life, I fail to believe that this almost six, in fact, more than 6 years of fully practicing being a chef would be something that God would not will. It's a long time for me to have pivoted back to tech. So I accept the will of God and keep pushing towards it. And it's not bad. When I started, I wouldn't make 1,000 CDs on a gig. But now there are gigs I make which surprise me. There are gigs I've had which are valued at 20,000 CDs, 30,000 CDs. And it makes you realize, yes, you may not see what you want to see, but there are other things which are happening for you on the side,
right,
which means that with continuous effort, with continuous, we're doing this more continuously and right, growing and getting better, it will get better. It will right, come to light. And I don't think I've thrown tech away. Like I said, it's the principles of creating that I learned from tech have a pivotal role to play in how I am as a chef now. Yeah. And I think, no, and I believe that if I was not a programmer or a software engineer before being a chef, I wouldn't be able to break some of the boundaries that I'm breaking now.
Mm-hmm.
Those things, those being able to think outside the box principles, those breaking the rules that have been set are the things which have made me stand out as a chef. And I appreciate having had a life before tech, because it influences a lot of what I do now as a chef.
Nice, nice. Okay, and to end today's episode, I want you to talk to someone who is at, you know, a similar crossroad, and someone who is thinking of becoming an artist, becoming a dancer, but then has a very, you know, technical or relatively technical career. And what's the best advice you give to them? Should they just go follow your passion, like they say, follow your passion abroad? Ghana, at the current situation, follow your passion. Like, so just, you know, just give your best advice to someone in maximum 2 minutes.
It's a calculated risk. You have to think about all the potential issues that could come up. Somebody could just quit being, let's say, a developer and become a dancer. Have you thought through it? Do you have something to support you whilst you are chasing your dream? Because your dream cannot be chased with an empty pocket. There has to be something to support you whilst you chase this dream. So think about that aspect. Think about the fact that the decision you make will affect more than just you. Think about the fact that do you just enjoy dancing, or is dancing your purpose? You need to think about the fact that life is hard. Life is very hard. And as much as this may be your passion now, is this the right time to pivot? Because the right time influences a lot. It's not a one-time decision. Everybody knows me as a software engineer who went to cook. But like I've explained earlier on, it was a very calculated decision. If I hadn't been offered a job which was going to match my salary, which would feed me once I did it, I would have stayed in tech. And once you make that transition, know that it is going to be difficult. There is no easy way around it. Even if you end up in a six-figure job right after you change your decision to chase your passion, it is not easy. Because there are 10,000, 20,000 other people chasing your same dream. So think about all the things. Think about it. Talk to as many people as possible. Get as much perspective as you can. And when you do decide to pivot, do it with tunnel vision, because you have to be in it for a while to realize whether it's worth it or not. And if you do pivot and it's not worth it, there's nothing wrong with accepting I made a mistake and I'm going back to figure it out. Because the fear of admitting the mistake is what keeps a lot of people stuck at a particular place.
Hey, I didn't know that you are a pastor philosopher in the making.
I beg you. God, if God's will is to be a pastor, who accept his group wholeheartedly.
Amen. Well, Chef Geeks, thank you so much for making time to join. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed this conversation. I know you as a techie chefy, but I think even talking to you, I appreciate your food a lot more, because it's not just, you know, someone just throwing ingredients together, someone who is actively and intentionally, you know, putting things together to serve whatever kind of, you know, clients he has. And I wish you all the best. You know me, I'm your biggest fan. Like, when I come to Ghana and I see you as a programmer, I'm always going to be there. So I'm your biggest fan, and I'm looking forward to seeing Blue Cheese, Chef Keeks, you know, the brand, you know, become bigger than it is now. Yeah.
Thank you for having me. I respect your decision to start a podcast to let others see the different perspectives to tech. A lot of us see tech as a nerd thing, to realize that it's more than that. As somebody I know personally, I'm glad that you consider my expertise something that is worth sharing with your audience. And I really am honored and I appreciate the opportunity to share with everyone what I have been through, and hopefully that I can inspire someone to take a decision or to at least wait and weigh their decisions before they make it. Yes, thank you. And I appreciate your podcast. I've been listening and I'm glad that now I'm not just learning from someone, but then I also get to share and have someone learn from me.
Thank you. Thank you. Super thankful.
The idea of abandoning one's high-paying job for a relatively high-risk career is often scary and discouraging. Chef Keeks, however, shows us that it is possible to still use the skills you have learned in tech in other fields, but this has to be done tactfully, as your geographical location may have some hurdles you have to overcome. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Tech Stuff Podcast. See you in the next episode. I'm gonna go get some more.